Hello, this is Andy Cates from London.
And this is Tian Yong Woon from Singapore.
And thanks everyone for taking the time to tune into this latest edition of our weekly podcast. So this week we're going to make a nod to this week's positive US inflation surprise, and with reference in particular to the recent run-up in oil prices. Tian Yong will touch on this week's central bank decisions from Asia, as well as on some recent developments in the value of the yen. We will then, as usual, summarize some of the key events and data points to look out for over the next few days. Just before we kick off, a reminder, as usual, that all of the views that we express on this podcast are our own. They're not the views of Haber Analytics. So this week's stronger than expected US inflation data have clearly further dampened hopes that the US Fed will swiftly lower interest rates in the coming months. And that's led to a little bit of anxiety in financial markets about the outlook for the US and broader world economy. As ever, these data points are analyzed extensively by US economists, and you can find our own commentary, incidentally, on our Haber.com website. I think what's been catching my eye on this is the role of energy prices and oil prices in particular in causing some of the latest inflation shenanigans. To be fair, car insurance costs have been grabbing a lot of the headlines in the financial press. But I think in a generic sense, we should be looking quite carefully at present at what's been happening in the energy complex. And there are a couple of exhibits in our accompanying Charts of the Week publication that illustrate what I'm driving at here. It never ceases to amaze me how closely correlated energy price gyrations are with US and broader global inflation surprises. There's been a sharp run-up in oil prices over the past few weeks, some of which I think can undeniably be traced to geopolitical tensions in the Middle East. And some of it can, I think, undeniably be traced to a bout of stronger than expected global growth. And it should, in my view, therefore not have come as a big surprise, therefore, that this has leaked into higher US inflation levels and higher levels more particularly than had been anticipated. Possibly at risk of gross exaggeration here, but energy is quite simply at the root of everything we do in the world economy. Notwithstanding alternative energy sources, and oil prices therefore still exert a very profound impact on macroeconomic outcomes. The direction of travel for global growth, for global inflation, for monetary policy, and for financial markets are likely to therefore be heavily influenced by how oil prices behave from here. And I think more particularly when sort of viewing the kind of global economic and political predicament right now, any further flare-up of instability in the Middle East, possibly stoked by escalating tensions between Iran and Israel, could therefore sow the seeds for much more global economic instability in the period ahead. So those are sort of my two cents on the world economy. But over to you, Tian Yong. What's going on in Asia? What's been happening this week?
Thank you, Andy. It's all about central bank decisions in the Asia Pacific, with New Zealand, South Korea and the Philippines having set their policy rates this week. As expected, all three central banks kept their policy rates unchanged, inflation still amongst the top of their list of concerns. So the remarks, along with those made by some other central banks lately, likely pushed back against market expectations of imminent easing in the respective economies. Diving into specifics, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand kept the official cash rate at 5.5% despite an ongoing recession, justifying its restrictive monetary policy with the need to further cool inflation. The central bank, however, sees inflation returning to within its target 1-3% range this year. In South Korea, its central bank left its base rate unchanged at 3.5%, also citing high inflation as a reason to maintain the restrictive policy stance. Other concerns that the central bank raised related to exchange rate volatility and geopolitical tensions. In the Philippines, the central bank retained its target reverse repurchase rate at 6.6%, as with the previous two, the central bank also flagged inflation-related considerations in its decisions to keep policy settings tight. Touching a little on the currency front as well, we saw even more yen weakness against the dollar this week. Specifically, the dollar-yen exchange rate has already risen above 153, the highest reading since the 90s. So the yen remains the worst performer amongst Asian currencies this year, with several news outlets citing yield differentials as a possible driver of the yen's persistent depreciation. However, some analysis outlined in the latest economic letter from Asia suggests that there may be some other factors at play too. That's all from me for now, Andy.
Great, thanks. So you've reminded me, I mean, one thing I didn't touch on in my overview of the global macro developments, it was the ECB. So, I mean, for the record, the ECB left all of its policy settings unchanged yesterday. We're talking at the moment on Friday morning, UK time. But ECB President Lagarde did signal, I think, that rate cuts are coming. Markets are currently anticipating that rate cut, or that first rate cut in the cycle, will emerge in June. The only sort of fly in the ointment that I would stress again, though, concerns inflation and whether or not we see a bit of a push-up to the euro area's inflation arithmetic from recent energy price shenanigans. Let's turn, though, now to the week ahead, where the US, again, for the record, sees a flurry of data releases over the next few days, with I think some of the forward-looking business surveys, such as the Philly Fed survey, the Empire State survey, likely to be closely monitored. Markets will also doubtless look very closely at the March retail sales print for clues on how the consumer is holding up. As for Europe, and actually just off the heels of some stronger-than-expected GDP data that have just been published, the UK also sees a lot of important releases next week, including some labour market and inflation data, all of which will doubtless be important for the Bank of England's upcoming interest rate decisions. Arguably as, if not more important, though, than these economic releases will be the US Q1 earnings season, which has already kicked off and which will see a few important bellwethers release their take on matters next week. And finally, from my side, the latest IMF meetings are being held next week and will be accompanied by its latest economic outlook and its latest financial stability report, the headlines from which will also doubtless feature in the financial media in the week ahead. What about in Asia, Chanyeol?
Thank you again, Andy. China will probably be our focus next week in Asia. Specifically, we will be eyeing the economy's Q1 GDP result and its March readings of the usual monthly releases, namely industrial production, fixed asset investment, and retail sales. So I guess what the markets would really want to see is if the recent narrative of China's economic stabilization can continue to hold water in context of the upcoming readings. To recap, the Chinese economy has seen a series of quite encouraging releases recently, in both the hard numbers and survey results such as the PMI readings, spurring some optimism that some stabilization may finally be here, but let's see the latest numbers. Apart from China data, some attention will likely be given to inflation readings of other economies, namely of New Zealand and Japan. And besides all these releases, that's all from me in Asia, Andy.
Terrific. Let's leave it there for today. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. Further analysis on these issues can be found in our latest Charts of the Week publication and in our Asian Economic Letter. That's it. Have a great week ahead.